Welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything for you. This is the podcast animation. Ah, crap, I screwed it up. Wait, no. This is podcast animation, the fudge nabbit. Okay, well, screw it, never mind. All right, but specifically, though, it talks about the latest news that happened this week. And for this week, it wasn't easy trying to find stories in here. I'll explain a little bit later, but so far, I will start things off by talking about DreamWorks Animation, and so far, they have actually canceled a project without us trying to know, but yeah, lo and behold, the news really did broke out. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a documentary about Howard Ashman. Then afterwards, we will officially have a release date for the animated short Dear Basketball, which is something you should keep an eye on. Then afterwards, there will be a streaming video on demand service that will be entirely devoted to Boomerang, which is all the stuff that Warner Brothers has, which is something that could be really neat, you'll see. And finally, we now have, we will have Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And let me just start this off by saying that it really wasn't easy trying to find animation stories that's been going on, or even just movie news in general, what's going on in the entertainment industry. Because so far, what's going on in that department, things have been rather calm, honestly. People have been focusing a lot more outside of what's going on in the entertainment industry this week. There have been a few events that have been going on. Some examples would include that we have had International Women's Day, which gave all the girls, ladies, and women from all around the world enough motivation to go out and fight for equal rights and also for equal pay, especially during these dark times of fascism. There was also Ben Carson, who somehow is really stupid to the point that he doesn't know what would be the big difference between immigrants and slaves during the pre-colonial period. And also, we have gotten a glimpse of what will be Trump Care, where apparently it's an idea that is so stupid and so freaking convoluted, and the way that Paul Ryan just makes himself look like a total moron trying to present it the best that he can, basically saying that only the rich can afford it, where it's so bad that even smarter Republicans are looking at it going, yeah, you know what? Obamacare doesn't seem that bad after all. I mean, sure, it's very flawed, but at the very least, now that we got something to compare to, at least it's not frickin' Trump Care. Nah, but yeah, basically, like the whole Trump Care thing is one of the millions of examples of how the Trump administration is just filled with nothing but racist idiots. I swear to God, it's just absolutely really dumb. But the point is, with what I'm saying, is that this was a week that people have been focusing on the news that's going on in the real world. Now, in the animation world, however, there really isn't necessarily a lot. Like, even some of the things I would talk about in here are more animation-related news than it really is directly animation news. But there is one in particular that really did stood out in terms of animation news, and that is what is going on with DreamWorks. And it actually is really interesting, because last week, DreamWorks made the huge announcement that they would go and celebrate the fact that they have announced a brand new project that they are going to make, which is Trolls 2, coming out in 2020. But while they did that announcement, they also tried to do something that they hoped to sweep under the rug, but then news broke out and things have gone pretty crazy with it. Like, there's no official word coming out of DreamWorks Animation about it, but yeah, now we officially know. And it's going to be about a project called Lorikins. And what's going on with Lorikins? Well, apparently nothing, because it's officially canceled. The project is dead. Now, the first time that the news broke out is actually through Tim Minchin, who was supposed to be doing his directorial debut. And for those of you who don't know, Tim Minchin is actually both a composer and a comedian. And he has already done some composing works for Broadway shows, including Matilda and Groundhog's Day. And he was supposed to do this big project along with Chris Miller. No, not Phil Lord's buddy, but the Chris Miller who directed Shrek the Third and Puss in Boots. But then on his website, he revealed that he was going to throw a little party where he would just play some ballads and just get drunk, because a little part of his message actually stated, I've recently been, it's right here. I'm using my source through Cartoon Brew, so it stated right here, I've recently been working in 3 different continents, missing my kids a lot, sleeping too little, and not playing piano enough. And then, a couple of days ago, the animated film of which I've dedicated the last 4 years of my life was shut down by new studio execs. Now, the big thing is that we don't know the specifics onto why Larrikin's shut down. The most that we've gotten so far was that apparently, in terms of the creative aspect, things are not necessarily going as well as the new bosses down at NBC Universal are kind of like, they're not necessarily pleased with it, so they ultimately decided to shut down the project. Now, for those of you who don't know what the Larrikin's project is specifically, like, what is Larrikin's in its core? Now, returning into my source here on Cartoon Brew, it stated, the story, here it is. All right. Larrikin's was a musical comedy set in the Australian outback and told the story of a desert-dwelling Bilby who leaves his home under a rock to go on a road trip with a music band. And that's basically the whole idea. It's an Australian outback musical, and it would have featured a lot of different Australian animals just singing and dancing. And even the cast that they have already gotten is actually pretty interesting, to be very honest. They actually got a big, recognizable cast of Australian actors, which some of these would include Naomi Watts, there's Margot Robbie, and Hugh Jackman. So this could have been an interesting crossover to see Wolverine and Harley Quinn together just as Australian animals just singing and dancing. However, the project ultimately just didn't work out as well. And honestly, I really do not blame Tim Minchin to feel really bad about it, because, like, he just went out and decided, ah, screw it, I'm going to throw a party and just go and drown my sorrows while playing the piano in front of an audience. Like, I really don't blame him, considering that he was, he stated in his message that he spent 4 years working on this project just to ultimately get it shelved. And that is, you know, that's rather unfortunate, but a part of it is mostly because that's kind of how the business works. It does happen when you would seem like it would be so close to completion, but then suddenly it's all over. Like, it's pretty much removed. It's all done and it's just taken away. So I definitely do sympathize Tim Minchin, where, and especially the fact that this would have been his, like I stated before, his directorial debut as, someone to enter into the movie scene where he can legitimately be a movie director working on an animated feature, which would lead him to probably a bigger career path. But no, this, what ended up happening is just, it just broke down. It just canceled. And he has nothing to prove that he worked on a feature film, which is rather unfortunate for the guy. I understand that. But honestly, we should have seen the signs that this could have happened. Honestly, the fact that we haven't heard a lot of news from Larrikin's, that should have been an indicator right there that something is not going right with the production. Something isn't necessarily going as well as probably of what DreamWorks wanted because of this massive silence that we've gotten. Because one key factor that I would like to mention is that the original release date that they have scheduled was February 16th, 2018. As I'm recording this, that's like less than a year from now. At this point, we could have at least gotten something. I don't think that we would have gotten probably a teaser trailer. It's probably a little too early for that. I mean, for God's sakes, even right now, we don't even have a teaser trailer for freaking Captain Underpants. And that thing is coming out in June. But not necessarily a teaser trailer, but something that would be more like a press announcement that DreamWorks would go to the media, like some kind of source like Entertainment Weekly or USA Today or something like that, and they would announce that they are doing this project called Larrikins, along with showing some concept art for it. You know, just something that DreamWorks can officially say that they are working on Larrikins. Not like mention it with a list of other movies, just say Larrikins, you know, just to promote that movie to get the early hype on it. Now, we didn't really get any of that, and it is true, the factor that before the announcement of the cancellation, we've received no concept art. There was no such thing as concept art released publicly online about Larrikins whatsoever. The only ones that we have gotten, like the first time that we've seen any sort of images of the Larrikins, is just a few days after the project was announced that it was canceled. Peter DeSev, who is known to be the character designer of the Ice Age movies, he actually worked early on when Larrikins was brand new at DreamWorks Animation. And he actually just posted on Twitter a few images of the Larrikins project, where we see a crow, a frog, just a few heads of an eagle seeing his facial expressions, and also like this weird ugly looking crane. I'm not saying that like it's drawn badly or anything like that. It's just like, I think, like, he did it on purpose to make the crane look a bit ugly or something like that. But, yeah, like, that's the most that we have ever gotten in terms of concept art. And that's pretty much it. Like, this is just showing us a few ideas of what some of the characters look like. We don't even know if these are, like, any of the main characters or anything like that. And, you know, it really does suck in a way because this could have been a pretty decent, interesting idea, where you do get this movie entirely set in the Australian outback, and like it would bring back DreamWorks Animation to do more musicals back, like it would bring them back to their roots in the very beginnings when they would do movies like The Prince of Egypt or The Road to El Dorado, because DreamWorks Animation did have a pretty good knack in making musicals, especially with those two films. Those were really a lot of fun, and they do offer great songs as well. And this could have been a great chance for them to actually get back on their feet with it. I mean, I can understand that some people can argue that technically they did that with Trolls, but that's more of a jukebox musical. The only new song that we have gotten is just Can't Stop the Feeling. But what I mean is more something that could be like an entire like original musical, and especially like an original movie, which is something that DreamWorks at this point, they would probably really need, especially when right now, like they can't really get a brand new franchise going on, with the exception of just Trolls 2, which they decided to get mostly for marketing purposes than really to make another Trolls movie. But other than that, it is a little bit worrisome. And it could have been a great idea. But yeah, it's rather unfortunate that they had to lose like an original idea that could have a lot of potential. But I will say right now that the one thing that really does worry me about the fact that they decided to get rid of Larrikins is the fact that right now, DreamWorks has absolutely nothing scheduled for 2018. Because the thing is right now is that They got two movies going on for 2017 with The Boss Baby and Captain Underpants, and the ones afterwards are going to be jumping ahead to 2019 with How to Train Your Dragon 3, with Everest, and also Trolls 2. And that's pretty much it. 2018 has absolutely nothing. Beforehand, they had two projects going on with Larrikins and The Croods 2, but both of them ended up being completely canceled. They decided to take them out both. So now 2018 is completely empty, which the last time that DreamWorks did not release an animated feature in 1 year was way back in their very beginnings in 1999. And that's it. And it is a little bit worrisome mentioning this, considering that when you do look back, I mean, for the longest time, DreamWorks Animation has been releasing like 2 to 3 animated features annually, and even nowadays, they gotta cut it down to just 2 to just 1 animated feature annually. And now the factor that there's gonna be 1 year in which they're gonna release absolutely nothing, it is a bit worrisome, and maybe it's a little bit of paranoia speaking, but I am worried that this would lead to my ultimate fear that I had since Comcast bought DreamWorks, would be that like the entirety of DreamWorks Animation would just be diminished, and Comcast is only going to be using DreamWorks just for property purposes to show off Shrek and How to Train Your Dragon and Kung Fu Panda just at their theme parks or merchandising and stuff like that. You know, that's pretty much it that they want to do with it. And that's a bit, you know, and honestly, I'm a bit worried about that, you know? Like, if it does lead to that, then it would definitely be sad that they would end up taking what was at one point one of the biggest animation studios in the industry and just reducing it down to just a property machine. I mean, of course, there are other factors that are keeping DreamWorks Animation alive, like the television production, and especially with the massive success that they got with Trollhunters. But I don't know. It's just a part of me is a little bit worried. But then again, like, as I stated before, last week they did announce that they are going to do Trolls 2 for 2020. So maybe having a break entirety at DreamWorks Animation for 1 year may not be so bad per se, but it is a little bit worrisome that DreamWorks Animation is not going to be what they used to be. Like, because at this point right now, they're kind of a bit of a shell of what they used to be. Because at one point, DreamWorks was way up there against Disney and Pixar in terms of really of distributing animated features. But nowadays, they're kind of like going back down a little bit, where some studios like Illumination are in a higher position than them, and now DreamWorks is pretty much laying low with some of the other second-rate animation studios like Blue Sky or Sony Animation and stuff like that. And it really is a bit disappointing, unless DreamWorks would find a way to at least release one animated feature for 2018, like maybe move back How to Train Your Dragon 3 to 2018, try to pull off like an Incredibles 2 and just give it to us sooner than expected. That would actually be kind of exciting, considering that they also have a Shrek 5 going on, and maybe they can put that in 2019 just to fill that gap. But who knows? It is a little bit concerning right now with what's going on in DreamWorks' position. And like in the article in Cartoon Brew stated, we're not 100% sure of what's going to be going on with the crew who have been working on this movie, Larrikins. We don't know what's going to be going on with them. We don't know if either they're just going to move to another project or if they're going to get another series of layoffs. Because lately, Comcast have been doing a lot of layoffs for DreamWorks Animation to really shorten it, because they don't necessarily need as much people working on DreamWorks Animation now that they are an association of NBC Universal. I really don't know, but I definitely am hoping for the best for both DreamWorks Animation and for the artists who have worked on Larrikins. And who knows what could happen in the future. Maybe, like, what Peter Dasev started, we'll probably see a little bit more coming out of DreamWorks Animation. Maybe some animators are going to post some animation tests or just a little piece of work that they have done onto Vimeo, because that's kind of what happened with The Croods too, is that when that project ended up being canceled, there were a few animators who actually did posted some unused animation for The Croods 2 onto Vimeo, and they are pretty interesting to check out when you see the recognizable characters of The Croods along with who could have been new ones, you know? So maybe we could see a little bit more of Larrikins now that it's canceled, but that'll be all up to the animators, the artists, and especially DreamWorks Animation if they will allow it, you know? Like, if they think it's going to be okay to post some canceled projects online, but who knows? But yeah, the entire story is that sadly Larrikins is now canceled, and so far, well, let's just see if DreamWorks is even going to do anything for 2018. Okay, now for our next story right here, when I first look at it, I was just there thinking, oh god, I don't think I can even. Because that's the mood I felt when I saw this. I just can't even. And the reason why I say this is not because this is going to be a bad project. I know for a fact that this can actually turn out so great, but my god, this is going to be depressing as all hell. And what I am talking, of course, is actually a documentary that's going to be about the late and great Howard Ashman. Now, the news actually broke out in an interview in LaughingPlace.com when they were talking with producer Don Hahn in order to go and promote the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast. And going into my source here at Broadway World, it has stated that Don Hahn said, "I haven't talked about this a lot, but I'm working right now on a documentary about Howard. He's one of the great songwriters of our generation and of the 20th century, and his life was cut short. To be able to pay tribute through a documentary or through a film like Beauty and the Beast is terrific, and most of the audience will know Howard or his name, but to you and me, he means a lot. And he means so much of a huge part of the kind of Disney legacy that's what our generation grew up with as filmmakers or as audience members." Now, to give you a quick little summary of Howard Ashman, he began working on a few Broadway shows where he's more of a lyricist and often like a composer, a director, and all that kind of stuff. He would make some big Broadway shows where he created some like God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. And then one that actually is actually pretty popular right now is the musical adaptation of Little Shop of Horrors, which will later turn into a feature film. But then later, he decided to move to Disney, where he went on to work with many animated features, well, to work on many animated features with Alan Menken on films such as Oliver and Company, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and he was considered for Pocahontas, but then sadly, he passed away very young at the age of 40. And the reason why, like, I feel so distressed, like, I have the feeling that I can't even, is because I have seen Waking Sleeping Beauty many times. And if you haven't seen Waking Sleeping Beauty, oh god, please do so. It is a phenomenal documentary. Again, it's done by Don Hahn, and it's just absolutely beautiful. It talks about the entire history of Walt Disney Animation Studios from 1984, when they were pretty much almost completing The Black Cauldron, all the way up to 1994, when they just released The Lion King, and it was just absolutely huge. It is an amazing documentary, I'll just say that right now. And there are moments when they do talk about Howard Ashman, and oh god, it is the most emotional and saddest part of the documentary. Like, I would go into tears whenever they would bring up the moments with Howard Ashman. Like, easily, the saddest part would be when, like, some of the big heads of Beauty and the Beast would go into St. Vincent or St. Jude Hospital. I think it's St. Vincent, actually. They went into the St. Vincent Hospital to check up on Howard Ashman, and he was absolutely weak to the point, like, he's blind and, like, he's on the verge of dying. And they mentioned that he had a Beauty and the Beast sweater. And they were mentioning to him how Beauty and the Beast was such a great big success, and they were giving their final goodbyes. It is so freaking emotional. It is so freaking sad. And plus the fact that if you do have the DVD of Waking Sleeping Beauty, oh God, it gets even sadder at this point, because there are some bonus features where they would talk about specifically Howard Ashman, and it gets sad. Like, even the people getting interviewed, like, they start bawling whenever they would think about Howard Ashman. It is so, like, it is so depressing. But yeah, but that's mostly the aspect of the passing of Howard Ashman, and the fact that, yes, he definitely did die way too freaking young. And like, I'm sure that there are going to be some positive aspects of it. I mean, this is the guy who wrote the music for, like, The Little Shop of Horrors, for Beauty and the Beast, for Little Mermaid, and some of Aladdin. So, like, of course, there will be some moments that we can go and celebrate. But I know for a fact that even though we're going to see a lot of happy moments in this, there are going to be some dang sad moments as well. I'm definitely excited for this. This is definitely the kind of documentary I would absolutely go and watch. This is definitely interesting. But knowing Don Hahn and how he would make documentaries, and, like, the thing is, Waking Sleeping Beauty is not the only one that I've seen. I know that he has done others, like, in the Diamond Edition of The Lion King on Blu-ray, there's one bonus feature that he did in the exact same style as Waking Sleeping Beauty called The Lion King, A Memoir. And, you know, that one was also really interesting as well. But with the style that Don Hahn would make his documentaries, and, like, with the amount of emotion that he would put onto each of them, telling the scenarios of what's going on, and especially when he would talk about Howard Ashman, oh God. Like, if you grew up with the Disney Renaissance, if you know the music of Howard Ashman, if you know his contribution of what he has done at Disney, you are gonna cry. Like, a lot. Holy crap. It doesn't specify when it's going to be released, but when it will, yeah, just bring some freaking tissues, dude. Alright, so for our next story right over here, we are going to be talking about an animated short I have already covered a while back in the animation podcast. I've already mentioned about this, and it is a very strange collaboration of some of the biggest names in their field, but I'm sure it could probably turn out to be something amazing. But now it looks like we are officially going to have a premiere of when this short is going to be coming out, and I am talking, of course, about Dear Basketball. And the whole thing with Dear Basketball is that this is the combining works of three of the biggest names of their field. We got NBA superstar Kobe Bryant. You got the king of film composers, John Williams. And then you also have master animator Glenn Keane. Three names you never expect that they would be together, but they all collaborated to work on this one project, which is Dear Basketball, which is basically taking the poem that Kobe Bryant has done about basketball and to go and give it a visual representation along with some nice little music from John Williams. So basically, it's the collaboration of three masters and just turn it into this one big ultimate project that would be an animated tribute to basketball in general. But that's Dear Basketball itself. Now, when it's going to make its big premiere is going to be at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York. And so far, what has happened is that Dear Basketball is going to be one of the 10 animated shorts that's going to be premiering at Tribeca. The other ones actually also include Cur Pigeon, Summer Camp Island, Odd is an Egg, Angel, The Talk, True Stories about the Birds and the Bees, Second to None, and Escape. And on top of that, there is also our first look onto Dear Basketball. We don't have any clips or anything like that, but we do have an image of what it would look like. And from what I see, it's very rough, per se. And what I mean by rough is that, from what I can tell, if this is what it's going to look like throughout the entire short, like, what you're going to see is that it is very hand-drawn, where everything, you can tell it's done by pencils, no clean animation, like, everything, like, you could definitely tell the strokes, like, of each pen, like the strokes of each mark that's put onto pencil, and you can see, like, the little scribbles that they would do for shadings. And yeah, so this is definitely going to be a really sketchy animated short, but I'm sure, like, there must be some kind of artistic thing going on to represent Dear Basketball. But also, there is one more thing I would like to mention about it, is that, yes, even though it will make its premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival, eventually it will actually go and premiere online, that you can go and check it out, which it stated, going here on my source in Cartoon Brew, based on a poem written in 2015 by NBA player Kobe Bryant to announce his retirement from the game. The project is produced by Bryant's Kobe Studios, Believe Entertainment Group, and Sports Illustrated, which will eventually screen the film on SI.com. So eventually you will see it online. And yeah, I'm actually pretty excited to know that pretty soon that we will get this, and especially as an animation fan, I'm mostly excited to see the magic of Glenn Keane coming to life, especially on his post-Disney days. Like, I remember seeing the animated short that he did, Duet, which was really, really fascinating, and yeah, like, it definitely shows that even without Disney, Glenn Keane can still provide some beautiful animated magic, and maybe it could be the same thing with this one. And honestly, what I am actually pretty excited about it is that this could probably be something that I can share with my sports friends. I know like a few family members and some friends who are like just sports fans in general, and they do also really like basketball, so maybe this could be something that I could share with them, or if they're even aware. And I know that with Glenn Keane, he could provide some top quality animation with this, so it might actually turn out to be something that's pretty, like, honestly, really magical, and who knows what it could eventually lead to. Even though Duet itself didn't get an Oscar nomination, like, hope maybe this one could actually get it, who knows. I mean, especially, like I said before, this is the huge collaboration between three masters, not just Glenn Keane, but you also got Kobe Bryant and also John Williams, so it must have some recognition at award shows. But who knows what could bring up. Maybe it could even be recognized, well, at the Annie Awards. That would actually be great if it could actually get a few, like, an Annie or two for this, because but who knows? I don't know. Maybe I'm just hyping it for myself. Who knows? Maybe the animated short would probably suck. Who knows? But no, I'm just saying this because I'm really excited for this animated short to see another piece of Glenn Keane coming to life, even if it's basketball and stuff like that. And it sounds like a pretty cool idea. So if you guys are as excited as I am to go and check out, to go and actually see Dear Basketball, it will premiere in New York City at the Tribeca Film Festival somewhere between April 19th and from April 19th to the 30th. And eventually, Sports Illustrated is going to put it on their website, but we'll just wait and see about that. Okay, so for our next story we have right over here is going to be something that could intrigue some cartoon fans out there. Now, this is just a little service that you can go and try out. How is it going to go? Who knows, but maybe it could be a good idea. And what I'm talking, of course, is going to be about Boomerang. And apparently, Warner Brothers and Turner have announced that they are going to be making a streaming video on demand service completely dedicated to Boomerang, where you can go and check out the classic and the classic cartoons and TV shows that are owned by Warner Brothers. So specifically, actually going into my source here on Variety, if I may read a little bit, the Boomerang internet video service, which will not carry any ads, will launch sometime in the spring of 2017 with a price starting at $5 a month. It makes the first time the two companies have offered the WB-owned animation library of 5,000-plus titles from Hanna-Barbera, Looney Tunes, and MGM on a streaming platform. New and classic shows from the services will include Bugs Bunny, Scooby-Doo, Tom and Jerry, The Jetsons, and The Flintstones, with content rotated weekly. And on top of that, it did mention that not only will it have some of the classic stuff, but there will be also offering some new stuff. So continuing on to my source, but Turner may irate fans of the Boomerang TV channel by making the streaming video on demand service the exclusive home for new episodes of three popular series: Scooby-Doo, Looney Tunes, and Tom and Jerry. In addition, the Boomerang subscription service will host exclusive original series. The first of those are the Warner Brothers animations Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, a new spin on the classic L.F. Bomb tale, and Wacky Races, a reboot of Hanna-Barbera's late 60s slapsticky road rally series. So basically, the recent shows that you would have of, like, the new Looney Tunes, or the new show that's going on with Scooby-Doo, or the new Tom and Jerry series, they're all pretty much going to be taken onto this streaming service. So if you want to go and check out new episodes, you go check it out right there. But one thing that I will mention right now, though, is that for the TV channel that's going on right now, like, going into here, the Netflix-style subscription video on demand service is an extension of the linear Boomerang TV channel, which Turner distributes to some 144 million households worldwide and include many of the same titles. The TV channel isn't going away, and Turner is positioning the streaming video on demand service as a complementary to the product it sells to pay TV providers, as a way for Time Warner to create new revenue streams from its division intellectual property portfolios. So basically, what this Boomerang streaming service is basically, if you go and take like all the classic cartoon shows all those shows that Warner Brothers own, and you would put it onto a service. So it's either you can go and watch it on TV as usual, or if you pay $5 a month, you would have the choice to watch whatever classic show you want, pretty much the Netflix equivalent of classic cartoons, along with a few new things as well. Like, you'll get the new shows, like even the new Wacky Races, and even a new Wizard of Oz show, which they even included a brand new picture of it. And on my source on Variety, they even show, like, the first image of what you would find of the new Wizard of Oz show. And, I don't know. Like, they are absolutely going into the same route as the classic movie of the late 30s. But with this, it's like, I don't know. You just got to see for yourself if the design would be your cup of tea. It's just, I don't know if I'm gonna touch that, but it's just, I honestly don't know. But yeah, it's more of an option if you want to check out whatever you want, then you can go and see that. But my biggest question regarding this streaming video on demand service is going to be, how much is going to be in there? Is it going to give us everything that we would want? Considering that they will provide all the MGM, like it said, that they're going to put all the MGM stuff, all the Looney Tunes stuff, and all the Hanna-Barbera stuff, are they going to put all in there? Are they going to show us all the Looney Tunes cartoons? Are they going to give us a lot more than what we had in the Golden Collection or the Platinum Collection? Are they going to give us a lot more of the MGM cartoons? Like, are we going to see a lot of the classic stuff done by Bill Hanna and Joe Barbera for the Tom and Jerry cartoons? Are we going to see a lot of the Tex Avery cartoons? And as for the Hanna-Barbera shows, like, are we going to see all of them included in there? Are we going to see all the classic Jetsons cartoons, all the Flintstones cartoons, all the Scooby-Doo cartoons, all the Yogi Bear cartoons, the Quick Draw McGraws, the Laugh Olympics, Snagglepuss, and all that kind of stuff? Are we going to see all that we would want? Like, are we able to go and choose to go and see all the classic cartoons? And especially, how far does it go? Like, are we gonna get, like, the entire collection from all the cartoons starting from the 30s all the way up to probably the 80s before Cartoon Network became a thing? Who knows? Like, we're not 100% sure on the details of what it can offer. But, you know, for cartoon fans, this does seem like a dream. But how much of it are we going to get? I don't know. Especially the fact that it's going to be a rotating service, so it's going to continuously change in the same veins of Netflix, where at one point, if you want to go and check out a specific episode of Scooby-Doo, or you want to, you know, maybe you don't want to get the classic Scooby-Doo, maybe you want to get somewhere like one of the shows from the 70s and 80s, like you want to watch the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, or you want to see, maybe that's the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, but like maybe the one with the Scooby-Doo series where Shaggy has the red shirt, and like they would talk with Vincent Price, and it would also have Scrappy-Doo and Flip Flap. You guys remember Flip Flap? But if you want to get that, but then suddenly they decide to ultimately take it away, is that the idea is definitely great. It sounds awesome on paper, but to what extent are we going to get? Is it going to be a better alternative than just watching it on TV? Where, like, I understand that they are giving us the option that we can either watch it on TV for free, or we can have the streaming service for $5 a month. Who knows? I don't know how deep this would go. I'm sure this is the kind of thing that someone has to have more of a hands-on experience to know how this is ultimately going to work, and if it really is going to be worth it for cartoon fans, especially for Looney Tunes fans. And like I stated before, for the Looney Tunes fans, I'm sure they would really want to know, like, how much is going to be in there. Like, are they only going to be providing the ones that would only appear in, like, the Bugs Bunny show, or the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour, or the Bugs Bunny and Tweety show, that they're only going to show all the Looney Tunes cartoons from 1948 all the way up to the early 60s? Are they just going to do that? Or are they going to show the entire collection? Like, they can go even before that. Like, maybe they'll show even the stuff from, like, Bosco or some of the World War II cartoons. Or even show some of the early works of, like, Bob Clampett and Tex Avery and all those guys. Who knows how far that they could go? It's a great idea on paper, but we need to see the execution of it if it really is worth it. I don't know if people are really, like, honestly, I don't really know if anybody is really going to be using it for the new shows. Like, honestly, I don't really see much people really that excited to go and check out the new series of the new Looney Tunes or the new Wacky Races. Like, they really need it for that. I don't know who's going to, but this is definitely going to be more for those who want the classic cartoons. So, how is it going to work? Well, we're only going to know somewhere in the spring of 2017. And so finally, we will end things off now with Matt's pick of the week. And for this week, I decided to go into one of Disney's live action reboots, since Beauty and the Beast is actually just around the corner and we're going to see how is it going to attempt to be like the animated masterpiece. But so far from what we have heard, I don't know. It sounds like it could be a mix. It could be good. It could be bad. I don't know. You'll just have to wait and see for yourself. But what I'm trying to talk about here is that considering that Beauty and the Beast is just around the corner, we are actually getting some news regarding the live-action reboot of Dumbo, which out of all the reboots that Disney is making, this is definitely one of the more weirder ones, especially with the decision of bringing in Tim Burton as the director. And for someone who knows Tim Burton in terms of his art style and the kind of movies that he would make, it's kind of weird that he would suddenly go into Dumbo. Like, would you see Tim Burton actually make his weird, macabre art style onto Dumbo? Like, maybe it would make sense for the pink elephant scene, but for Dumbo? I don't know, it sounds rather strange. And lately, though, they did try to bring in some actors into this. They tried bringing in Will Smith, they tried bringing in Tom Hanks, and they tried bringing in Chris Pine onto the film, but they all ultimately backed out. And so far, we don't really know what's going to be going on with it, but lately, there are some actors that they are trying to persuade into this. And the first of these is actually Eva Green. And going into my source here in the Hollywood Reporter, it has stated somewhere where... It has stated that Green, if she accepts the part, that Green will play a trapeze artist who works for the head of the circus. And by the way, the circus owner is the villain of the piece. And that's pretty much all that they said, considering that the plot of the live-action reboot of Dumbo is still kept under wraps. So that was the big thing, is that Eva Green could potentially be one of the stars of this movie. But then suddenly, a few days later, came another actor who is in talks to join Dumbo as well, and that is actually Danny DeVito. And it's stated here, now going into my source on Deadline, it has stated the live-action adaptation of the 1941... If things work out, DeVito would play Medici, the man who runs a smaller circus that gets acquired by the evil big top circus villain, Vladimir. Others involved in the picture say that DeVito's deal is pretty much closed, so there is a big chance that Danny DeVito is going to be there. So yeah, that's basically the big news that we got with this so far, is that apparently Danny DeVito and Eva Green could potentially be in the Dumbo reboot. But that is not the thing that really intrigued me in this whole story. Because the way that they worded out in terms of what's going to be going on with Dumbo is that even though they stated that plots are kept under wraps, they did reveal a lot of what the movie could potentially be. Going back into the Hollywood Reporter, it says that plot details are kept under wraps, but sources say that one thing the new version does is expand and deepen the circus aspect of the story. The project has four human leads plus the elephant who will be digitally animated. And yeah, that's pretty much the whole thing. The rest is just Green will play as a trapeze artist and stuff like that. But then, like I stated before, there was also the factor that you got Danny DeVito playing as the small circus owner whose circus will be taken away by the evil circus guy. So yeah, you do have a little bit of an idea of what's going on. And if you remember in the previous castings, when they tried to get in people like Will Smith and Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks was originally going to be the villain where he would play as Vladimir, as the big evil circus owner, which is kind of weird thinking about Tom Hanks as, like, he doesn't play villain roles. The most that he would play as a villain would be the Toy Story Black Friday clips. If you haven't seen that, oh my god, you are going to hate Woody. Just saying. But then there is also Will Smith, who is said to be, if he accepted, he would play the role of a widowed father of two kids. So that's kind of the idea, is that apparently what could go into Dumbo is that it might not be a remake or a reboot that might follow the same steps as the animated feature, but more something that would be more like a reimagining. Now, from what I'm expecting, it's not going to be a reimagining in the same veins of Pete's Dragon, where about 99.9% of that movie has absolutely nothing to do with the original feature. Like, the only thing that is connected with those two films is that there's a boy named Pete and a dragon named Elliot. That's it. But with this one, I am thinking that this could be more of a reimagining, kind of like Kong Skull Island, which I just recently saw, where, like, even though it's not going to have the same story, it's going to have some of the same elements. Like, you will still have Dumbo. You will still have the circus aspect. And, especially the fact that it'll go a bit more into the circus aspect, which would probably explain why that they did bring in Tim Burton, considering, like, his whimsical macabre theme would be perfect for a circus project. That, and also, one thing that would probably not surprise me, considering that they are going a little bit away from the original animated feature, is that I wouldn't be surprised if many of the original characters are not going to be there as well. Of course, they will have Dumbo, but, it would not surprise me if the crows are not going to be there, or even that Timothy Mouse is not going to be there. That is going to be a thing that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. Or maybe they're going to have, like, maybe they're going to turn Timothy into a human, perhaps. I really don't know. But it is actually rather interesting that they do bring in Eva Green and Danny DeVito, since they've already had experience with Tim Burton before. Eva Green has already been a part of Tim Burton's movies, including Dark Shadows. And recently, she was in Miss Peregrine's School for Peculiar Children. But then, admittedly, the choice of Danny DeVito, that one I find to be a little bit weird. Because the thing is, Danny DeVito is going to be playing a circus owner. And what I find a bit unusual with that is the fact that he already did that in a Tim Burton movie, even. If you guys don't remember, the 2003 movie Big Fish, is actually a really good movie. Danny DeVito actually does play this circus owner that would help out Ewan McGregor's character. And, like, Ewan McGregor had to go and work for Danny DeVito in his circus. And the only payment that Danny DeVito would give him is just little pieces of information of a girl that would eventually be the love of his life. And also on top of that, Danny DeVito is a werewolf. Like, at night he would suddenly turn into a wolf. And then there's suddenly at one point where you see him come out and he's back to his human self, but he's naked. So yeah, basically Big Fish has a scene where you do get to see Danny DeVito's butt. But yeah, like what I'm trying to say is that it is a little bit weird that Danny DeVito has to play the exact same role as what he did in Big Fish. Like, he's kind of doing the exact same thing, which I find it odd, but I don't know. If the movie can pull it off somehow, we'll see how it goes. But hopefully, I don't know. If they're going to do the same thing, then hopefully that doesn't mean that we're going to see more of Danny DeVito's butt in the movie. I have no idea. Who knows what could potentially happen. But yeah, it is a little bit interesting that now we do have a little bit more info in terms of the direction of what they're going to do with Dumbo. The fact that it's going to be more oriented towards the human characters, and that it's going to look into more the circus aspect. Now, how much of Dumbo we are going to get, that I'm not sure. If Dumbo could be played a bit like, you know, in the same veins of like Elliot in Pete's Dragon. But I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see with how that goes. We don't have a release date just yet. We don't really have a confirmation if Danny DeVito or Eva Green is going to be in the movie. But I don't know. Let's just see what Disney has with this weird and crazy idea. But anyways, that is pretty much going to be it for this week. So I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on iTunes, then hit that little like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dude.